So listen to this. Imagine a cube where each side is as long as a football field.
It's a big cube.
Big cube. Now put it all together. That is how much oil has gushed into the Gulf of Mexico, according to federal scientists. A total of 205.8 million gallons.
It's like pinning Jell-O to a wall, making a cube out of 205.8
million
gallons.
And one of our producers came up with this, and we think it's quite accurate, but just in case, I thought I'd say that. Anyway, this is what makes it the largest accidental oil spill in history. In the more than 100 days since, BP has made more than a dozen attempts to stop the flow of oil and permanently seal the well. Remember these?
The oil is weathered to a point now where it's inefficient and ineffective to use dispersant.
Golf balls and rubber tire scraps and other equipment to hope that this will clog up the blowout preventer.
We have been unable to overcome the flow from the well.
A little bit of methanol.
We have to actually go in with the relief well and seal this well off so it can no longer flow.
And now a new oil spill word for our vocabularies, a procedure called static kill. With luck, the last one needed. Throughout this process, what besides strange terms and, well, tricky maneuvers, what have we learned, what have scientists learned about how best to prevent another disaster like this from occurring? And does it take a crisis for us to find the answers?
And I hope the engineers are listening as well, not just the scientists.
I think, yes, exactly. who's leading whom here? It's certainly not us. Here's to discuss this, if the spill has prepared us for the future, is David Biello, Associate Editor of Environment and Energy at Scientific American. David, thanks for being with us. Let's start out with BP's current plan. What exactly is static kill?
Static kill is top kill with a cap. So you might remember that top kill was an attempt to pump mud down the flowing
sort of
well.
Engorge it and shut it up.
Yeah, exactly. They call it bullheading, actually. They, the flow of the mud is supposed to push back the flow of the oil. And static kill is just top kill with a cap. We've got this cap that has stopped the flow of oil for the last couple of weeks, and with that in place, they're hoping that top kill might work a little bit better.
Okay.
But they're taking it very slow.
All right. Obviously, everybody wants that one to work. The question is, 100 days, blah, blah, blah. What have we learned? And I hesitate to say not if another one happens, but when the next one happens. Have we, in fact, learned something from all this?
Well, I think we've learned a couple of things. Most obviously, you don't want to ignore safety precautions. It's pretty clear that from ignoring alarms to not choosing the most safe methods, the folks involved with this well did not follow the kind of standard protocols for doing this kind of thing. The second thing we've learned is that you kind of want to have some backup plans on hand. You might be very confident in your technology, but as with all things human, accidents happen. The reason that it's taken so long to get some of these solutions in place is that we didn't have a backup blowout preventer. We didn't have a nice cap for this well. We didn't have relief wells in place, and kind of pre-preparing some of those things, although it is expensive, would seem reasonable.
So unlike the space program, which you've covered a lot of, Lynn, there's no real strategy or culture of contingency planning in the oil industry, David.
NASA is full of redundancy, and the oil industry is not, David, right?
There is no redundancy. That is because this is a capitalist enterprise, and that would cut into the margins. But this is more similar to the space program than it is to kind of normal pursuits. I mean, we're talking about a well that's 5,000 feet down, the tremendous pressures, really only robots can go there, and it's controlled out of a control room in Houston. I mean, it's very very similar to the space
program. It is a great analogy in that regard. Okay, the things you've said we've learned are all pre-things. These are all things that need to be done ahead of time to guarantee it doesn't happen. What happens if it happens? What have we learned in terms of fixing it if the worst happens?
Well, in terms of fixing it, I think the number one thing we've learned is that we need to understand better what's going on. And actually, some of the visualization techniques that have come out of this, like bombarding these devices with gamma rays, courtesy of Secretary of Energy Stephen Chu, has enabled us to visualize what's actually going on. And if you can see the problem, then you can kind of design things to stop it a lot better. other than that, it really does come down to a question of kind of regulation and how we want to proceed in terms of how much redundancy do we want to force people to have. You know, this is a multi-billion-dollar industry. Certainly, it would seem that they could afford a little precaution.
One would think. And what about the bigger question? Does it take a crisis like this to improve the technology? Or, I mean, you, I guess, have made the point of, and if you're trying to make money, you're not going to spend your money on things that don't show a profit right away.
That's probably true, and certainly we have not come a long, long way from the Mexican oil spill or the spill off the coast of Mexico 30 years ago. In that case, which was in shallower water, we used dispersants to break up the oil, and that was pretty much the solution. And in this case, we've used dispersants to break up the oil, and that has pretty much been the solution for the past 100 days.
Go ahead, John.
Well, I mean, keeping with the space analogy, is this the Challenger disaster for the oil industry? I mean, do we get something besides, flexible O-rings?
I don't know. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what kind of comes out once they've hauled some of the wreckage off the floor and the oil well is stopped and they can kind of do an analysis. It would seem that many mistakes were made along the way. It's not just going to come down to O-rings. It's going to be everything from, you know, filling up the drilling rig with water in an attempt to put out the fire to kind of, like I said, ignoring the alarms along the way.
And the question is, do we know enough to keep doing it? David Biello, Associate Editor of Environment and Energy at Scientific American. Thanks so much.
Lots to think about.